I'm going to try to take a slightly different approach to the exam paper that Robert Mayer propounded at the beginning of this meeting. I'm going to try to talk and unpick the idea of research and innovation as an ecosystem. So I'm going to try and focus on the systems view of the research and innovation challenge, and to try and draw some at least preliminary conclusions, or at least try and unpick some of the questions that will face the UKRI as it develops its work. So UKRI is a key node in what is obviously a complex UK international research ecosystem. So it can offer strategic direction. It's a key funder. So what I want to try to do is to categorize the strategic priorities for an ecosystem and then say something about some of the nodes. I've been very fortunate in my own career that I worked in such a range of institutions that it actually represents most of the nodes. I've always been a researcher. I actually started in a government lab, which is actually now, or it was then named the Rutherford Lab. I've been a university professor running research groups and building research teams from Research Council grants. I've been a founder of a spin-out company. I've been a university vice chancellor, where I take then a different perspective on research priorities. I've been a chair of a research council, and most recently and currently, as Robert said, I'm the chief executive of a national institute, the Alan Turing Institute. So I use that just to say as examples of the nodes in what I'm calling the research ecosystem. And one of the things that I'm going to argue is that while we're talking tonight about strategy for UKRI, every node, from individual researchers upwards, as it were, through the scales, need a strategy. So that, in a sense, is my agenda. So in all these cases, for different nodes, there are common questions and challenges. We need knowledge of the current landscape. We need to ask what to invest our resources in, and Mark's given us lots of good examples of that, how we build capacity and skills, how we connect a top-down strategy to the potential creativity of the bottom-up. So all these challenges apply to UKRI, but they actually apply to every node. So another set of questions to inform our responses to these challenges. We have to ask the really difficult questions, like what are the potential game changers? So there's a blue skies research agenda, the moonshots, the known unknowns, bearing in mind that there will always be unknown unknowns. Some of the game changers will be rooted in basic science. Some will actually be rooted in real challenges, curing cancer or whatever, potentially a long list, real world challenges that actually still demand basic research. And then there's a second kind of question, which is, how do we apply known knowledge? And I'll take that as a kind of working definition of innovation. How do we get beyond what we've learned from our research and develop an innovation agenda? So what I'm arguing, first point I want to say, is that in trying to respond to these questions, I want to argue that a systems perspective is always valuable. So I'm using system in two ways. I'm talking about the ecosystem for research and innovation delivery. But I'm actually saying for any particular area of research, in the old physics term, what's the system of interest? The real advantage to me of forcing ourselves to ask that question is that it forces us into interdisciplinarity. It takes us beyond asking what disciplines can contribute to this, and it forces a higher degree of integration of the way we bring knowledge to bear on our key questions. And then there are questions of scale. Again, one of the advantages, I think, of taking a systems perspective is you immediately realise that you operate across a very wide range of scales. So it's totally obvious in physics, which it goes from the very micro to the very macro, but you can articulate this for almost any potential system of interest. So what that means, I want to make a particular point about a particular book, is that any system of interest is actually embedded in a hierarchy of other systems. So there will be supra-systems and there will be subsystems. And the book that I'm referring to is by Brian Arthur, and it was called The Nature of Technology. And he was talking about how technology evolves. But I think you can actually apply it and his argument, I seriously recommend the book, to how research evolves. And his key argument is that most innovation comes from a low level of the hierarchy. So if you take a very obvious example, computers were invented as calculating machines, but they're now ubiquitous across virtually all domains. So a discovery at a lower level that helps one key area of research is likely to transfer across domains. And I think that leads to some really interesting thinking about how you articulate research strategies. Go back then to what I said a couple of minutes ago, that in thinking about strategy, we start with institutions, what's the landscape, horizon scanning, the top down, and then have to relate that to the bottom up. Game-changing research or applied innovation. And as Mark properly emphasised, we're concerned with impact. So formulating these challenges, questions, approaches, I'm arguing within a systems framework, it's not the only way to do it. It actually provides some of the groundwork. And I go back to saying it has to be addressed for each node in the ecosystem. But the nodes then have to be effectively connected. And that then becomes about the flow of resources, the flow of money. Ideally, very difficult to make the judgments in the direction of the game changers, in the direction of high impact innovations. So each node, from the individual researcher upwards to UKRI, and in fact I wrote the words and beyond, I'm not sure there is a beyond, has to have a strategy that's grounded in experience, horizon scanning, and imagination. Now, it's long been thought that, and I'll put this in my language, that the ecosystem isn't functioning effectively. There have been reports, I would say, probably every 2 years for about the last 20, 30, 40 years about how we can become more effective in transferring research into industry. And that's obviously one of the key challenges which is for UKRI and which has been met by UKRI in the way that Mark has described. It has to have its own strategy, the top down, if you like. It's open to the bottom up. It has to incentivize research councils, innovate, universities, research institutes, and industry to have a chance of delivering the new and the real impact, the game changers and the path-breaking innovations. So how can UKRI and the elements of that ecosystem build a strategy? And I want to say there are positives and negatives in this. We can identify and build on strengths and opportunities. The former, the people with track records, the latter, the early career researchers who might have the skills, the imagination and the ambition. So top down and bottom up. Kick in here and integrate. I wanted to throw in, actually, that I would like to think that one of the ambitions of UKRI might be to help us get beyond the conservatism of the peer review system and the REF. I'm probably very unpopular in saying this, but I think for the university parts of the node, we're driven to a kind of conservatism with a small c if promotion procedures are rooted in publication in so-called top journals. And I'm always slightly concerned at that. And I think it's skewed the way many researchers, far from all, organise their work on a publications basis. And I hear now, as I'm trying to persuade researchers to work on main challenges, continually the question, how can I publish a paper on that? And I had heard some real evidence the other day, or somebody with real evidence, which took me a bit by surprise, that it's only by doing basic research that you can actually publish papers in prestigious journals. And that if you're doing applied research, the journals are not available, or they don't count, as it were, in the various aspects of measurement. So there's an element of the hobby horse there, but I do feel there are serious questions to bring to bear on that. Industry obviously has its own role to play. It's not about all about transfer from research into industry. So I would say, where are the modern equivalents of the Bell Labs? Perhaps it's in DeepMind and a number of other companies that actually function as research institutes as well as part of big industrial empires. How much of R&D is actually being done in startups? How much of big industry is actually relying on research in startups so they can, as it were, purchase success? So when we put all that together, I think there is a huge amount of excellent work in it between industry and universities. I think it's very much better now than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. So maybe all those reports have had a major impact. I then just want to put a different strategic question, which I think demands quite sensitive judgment. I'm not sure there's any real evidence either way on this. Is there an optimum size distribution of research groups? What should be at the big science end of the spectrum? So, you know, we understand the successes from CERN to Sanger, lots of big science. There are new institutes like Turin, Diamond, those being developed like Faraday and Rosalind Franklin, which might move towards having substantial funding on big new problems. But I want to pose the question of whether there are potential big science areas that are not funded as such. And I'll put in a local plea here. Many of you have heard me say this before, not least from this platform, that in my own area of research on cities, I've long argued that there should be a CERN, as it were, for research on cities. It's a serious big science problem. And I think it's very interesting, actually, that the place argument that Mark was reporting tonight actually demands urban analytics underpinnings, which and you know, part of it is in place in the other sense, and part of it is still turns on major research questions. So I want then just to make a final point. Is there a way of thinking about radical shifts? And I want to go back to one example that has certainly had an impact on my thinking over the years. In the 1950s, Warren Weaver was the science vice president of the Rockefeller Foundation, and he was spending the Rockefeller Foundation's science research money. And I go back to systems again. He was arguing that there are three kinds of system. and he called them symbol systems, although that would include firing a rocket to the moon. You know, in other words, you could do the maths of it and you knew what to do. Symbol systems, symbols of disorganized complexity, and systems of organized complexity. And very roughly speaking, the first two represented the physical sciences, and the systems of organized complexity represented the biological sciences. And what Weaver did on the back of that analysis was actually switch his funding from physical sciences to biological sciences. And if you think of the time that he did that, which was actually just before the discovery of DNA and the upsurge that followed from that point, it was a prescient decision. Is there anything equivalent now? And I want to then, in a sense, echo Mark's point about some of the social challenges. So if we actually look at climate change and sustainability, if we look at the future of work and incomes, if we look at growing social inequalities, these are all social science questions that connect to the rest of science. We can combine that with what Oseline Laser and her colleagues on the British Academy Royal Society Data Governance Group called Human Flourishing, which I thought was a really good title. And so, again, it connects us to the arts and the humanities. And is there an agenda there that actually demands a Weaver-like shift? In other words, from one chunk of science as the established science, if you like, to something which really meets new challenges. So I'm almost there. I've spent my time focusing on questions for strategy, for UKRI, but for every element in the research ecosystem. Universities, university departments, institutes, industry, government departments, I think, have their own right, as it were, to articulate their research agenda through to individual researchers. And then all that research thinking needs to be strongly connected to translational and developmental ecosystems. So I think what I've tried to do is to articulate some big questions, but I'm not claiming that there are any easy answers. Thank you.